Oborne and Heller on Cricket, brought to you by the Chiswick Calendar.
Hello, it's Peter Oborne here in a foggy Wiltshire.
Hello, it's Richard Heller in a grey and drizzly southeast London. It's a great pleasure to have with us today Stuart Anthony, who's captain the Graces Cricket Club, and Chris Sherwood, who is Press and Publicity Officer for the club, which is the first club for LGBT people, lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgendered people, for the benefit of listeners in other parts of the world for whom those initials might not be so familiar. Chris, tell us what led to the club's foundation in 1996, and what was the initial response to the invitation for players to join it?
Yes, thank you for having us on. Great to meet you both. In 1996, there was a group of cricket fans who convened in a pub near King's Cross Station called Central Station. And that is a local gay bar, one of the few remaining gay bars outside of Soho in London. And these friends thought it might be a good idea to set up a supporters group for gay people. And they quickly realised actually there was enough of an appetite amongst these people who were passionate about cricket to perhaps start playing. And one thing led to another, and Grace's Cricket Club was formed, so-called because of W.G. Grace, who was a great cricketing pioneer. And these group of cricket fans saw themselves as pioneers, and so it took on that name, Grace's, and founded the club back in 1996. And they started playing friendly matches, and it grew and grew and grew, and they ended up in a league. And here we are a couple of decades later, and we're a thriving, flourishing club that has expanded beyond just gay people, and we're now an LGBT plus friendly cricket club. What was fascinating to us was that in the year 2000, the Grace family complained, and it became a big national press story, which was great for the club. It did great for our awareness, free advertising for us. Of course, it never went anywhere. They had no intellectual rights over us. So the name remained, but it's fascinating that the Grace family themselves were not comfortable with their name being used for a gay cricket team.
That's very disappointing, because I do like, and I see the analogy. He was a sort of, in cricketing terms, a revolutionary figure.
Absolutely.
WG, completely reshaped and invented the modern game. So I do think it's appropriate. That's disappointing to learn.
How many players have we got now?
We have, at the moment, a squad of perhaps pushing 30 members currently. And
very decent total, yeah.
Yes, and unfortunately, beginning of the last season, a couple of pretty strong players got some injuries after the first game or two, so they weren't able to partake too much in the matches, although they've been fantastic in joining some of the social events that have been held since. But we're trying to push a regular matches of perhaps two teams on a weekend.
Thank you.
Encourage everyone's participation along the way. We tend to play on a Sunday, and so this gives people the freedom to play for other clubs if they want, or do other things on a Saturday, continue with their cricket or otherwise, and then we can get the Grace's games out and some matches played the Sunday. So pushing into the high 20s and 30 players means that hopefully we'll have a squad that's enough to maintain a couple of teams, a couple of sides on the weekend. We've had some female players over the years. At the moment, I don't think we have. We've got a number of trans players and certainly quite a number of gay players, gay males. But the predominance there would be gay males at the moment. But we're looking to be as inclusive as possible. And incorporate anybody who wants to partake in the sport.
What league are you in?
We played in the Chess Valley League this past summer, and we just got promoted up to Division 2. So we're going to
continue.
Thank you so much. It was a successful one. The previous year, so the beginning of when COVID happened, we did end up playing some league in a Middlesex Invitational League, and again we did quite well in that summer, albeit not all the games were played as anticipated through the restrictions of COVID. But having done well in the Middlesex Invitational, we got into this Chess Valley League, and it's been quite successful and thoroughly enjoyable. And you know, participation is a large part of what we want to have going on at the club, and playing friendlies as well as some leagues, a more competitive sport, really adds to the draw of people being involved in Graces, playing games where you can sort of excel on your own, and as well as some of the friendlies, which we've had some established oppositions for many, many years, for decades, in fact. And being a part of the match, it's not so much the result with the friendlies as the meeting up with similar players over the previous years and catching up on things that have gone by. The camaraderie between the different teams has been going for quite a long time now.
Chris, this season, 2021, you played a rather historic match, didn't you, against the second LGBT club in the UK, and I think also in the world, the Birmingham Unicorns. Where did you play the match, and what was the result?
That's absolutely right, yeah. It was an historical day for the club. It took place in Birmingham at a local ground there. I unfortunately didn't play. I was unable due to work commitments, but Stuart was there holding fort, and it was a wonderful day. And again, it was not so much about the result as about the fact that it was happening for us. And by all accounts, it was a stunning day, and I'll let Stuart talk a bit more about it.
It really was a tremendous day. Thanks, Chris. The number of people who turned up who weren't actually playing because we could only have 11 on a team, many, many supporters. The environment, the day turned out to be a beautiful day, having originally been slated for a washed out June. We ended up playing it in July, and it was an incredible day with over 100 supporters all around. Birmingham Unicorns they've been liaising quite a lot with Grace. We've been trying to work out a way of making the day as memorable as possible. For our side, with Graces, we actually fielded 13 players in total, with some rolling subs for participation purposes. And I know the Birmingham Unicorns as well had a number who were really, really keen to play, and so would roll in and out of different roles so they could be on the pitch and be part of what really has been an incredible moment of collaboration and also unity in what's going on. We had players coming all the way down from the north of England to play for the Unicorns. And of course, Grace is being based in London. We had many people from the home counties as well coming up. The support from the sidelines with many, many parents and families, and obviously, as you'd imagine, bright colours all over, made for an incredible festive day, and we were lucky in the end that the Graces won the match. But it wasn't so much about winning; it was really about bringing something together for the first time and having some future matches whereby LGBT friendly games will be happening. Hopefully, the next one will be in London, where we can host the Unicorns and any other teams that may have come together, and perhaps have it as an annual event.
Certainly should.
So I hope so. Chris, that match got a fair bit of publicity. I think most of the publicity was, you know, it was pretty friendly and pretty favourable. Was any of it, though, treat this match as sort of something extraordinary that, you know, LGBT people might want to play each other? Is there any of that, did any of that come through as well?
The press are universally supportive. We've certainly, in my time being involved with the club, we've had no negativity from journalists or press. They're totally supportive and have been very keen to further our cause. It's the social media, the individuals in members of the public making comments that we see that exposes some of the underlying homophobia, we might call it, that does exist out there. Indeed, I remember doing a Facebook advertising campaign quite a few years ago where I made a little video and was just raising awareness because, you know, one problem we have is that people just aren't aware that there is a gay cricket team if they're gay and like cricket. And so I did a targeted campaign targeting specifically people who had expressed interest in cricket and LGBT matters. So it's quite a tightly targeted campaign, not a huge spend. And even despite that, we got to see all the comments, and there were quite a few homophobic comments, some of which I can read to you here. So, for example, "What the fuck is going on in this world? I think it's called progress," someone replied. "Fuck your stupid progress. If this is progress, the human race is well and truly doomed." And then there was a whole raft of people tagging their friends under the video, saying, "Haha, you want me to sign you up?" Lots of laughing emojis. "Oh, like my balls, big and red." "Can you imagine the bowling run-up?" Again, more smiling emojis. "You and Jay can join." So again, lots of people tagging their mates. "This is right up your street, mate. Ha ha ha." That kind of thing.
I mean, really, really shocking that. It actually goes quite a long way to answering the question which Richard and I were going to ask you next, is why do LGBT people in the Britain need a cricket club?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a question I get asked a lot. You know, people suggesting that aren't we just furthering the segregation and ghettoising ourselves? And my response to that is always, well it's twofold. One, I wouldn't be playing cricket now were it not for the existence of this club, because when I discovered Graces, I wasn't playing cricket. And I had recently moved to London. I was in the closet as a gay man and was kind of coming to terms with my sexuality and was starting to explore that. And the idea of joining a club where I didn't know anyone and running the risk of coming out and having no idea what the response to that would be, I just stayed clear of it and avoided it. And then when I saw that Graces existed, I thought, oh great, here's somewhere where I can go, make friends, and not have to worry about what the response to me will be. And kind of counterintuitively, by being a member of a gay cricket club, I'm not defining myself within that club as the gay one. I'm defined in other terms, you know, Chris the actor, for example. Whereas if I was to play in a normal cricket club, I feel that I would be defined to at least some extent by my sexuality. Oh, Chris, the gay one. Oh, he's gay. And that's not something that I was comfortable with or wanted to do or be. The other side of it for me, and an important reason why we exist, is to change perceptions. Being a visible outpost of gay people playing sport is a really useful way to change people's perceptions. I remember when I came out, someone very close to me saying, "Well, you can't be gay. You're into sports. You're very sporty. You can't be gay." And you know, this is one of those great perceptions, and it's a big reason why a lot of people don't come out in sport, because male homosexuality is associated with femininity, effeminacy, which is not something that is conducive to sporting prowess, or so the perception has it. And so by turning up at cricket clubs as a gay team, I suspect there are, you know, a few jokes and side comments, or at least private thoughts about what they're going to be confronted with. In fact, I remember we were organised a last-minute fixture with a club last year, and because we had a cancellation, and this club were a bit reticent about playing us. They said, "You know, we are quite good. We do have some good players. Are you sure you're going to be, you know, up to it and give us a game?" They weren't saying it was because we were gay, but I believed they were thinking these things. And we said, "Oh yeah, no, we play to quite a good standard, we've got some good players." And of course we turned up and dominated the match. And I think they were surprised by that. So that's another reason why we're out there and we're playing, is that we're changing perceptions and normalising homosexuality in sport.
So Stuart, what about your experience of cricket? Did you find it was just a slightly intimidating environment?
I've enjoyed playing cricket for many, many years. And there are obviously a great number of players within a team. So you're not necessarily going to be singled out just if say, had there been two, three or four in a team. So being part of 11, you can feel that you don't necessarily need to pipe up and talk to people about who you actually are. It can be easier to be quiet and let other people, sort of perhaps more dominant people, continue conversations in the social way. But I certainly felt inhibited about in my ability to be open about who I was when I was playing. So I would more be inclined to not talk about that at all, because I felt that as a male who loved sports, wanted to stay active and participate, that it was perhaps in contrast to what people thought gay men ought to do and how they ought to be involved. And you know, joining this club, I very much echo what Chris said earlier, a place to feel comfortable who you are and to focus on the sport and the camaraderie amongst your players, the supporters that are there, the scorer, the whole cricket at large, and not to feel that you're being looked at for being the odd one out, the unusual one that is not really related to cricket at all, but just to your identity as to who you are.
Very interesting, actually. I got a very old friend. I've known him for 40 years or more. Crispin Blunt, who's an MP, who
he's even played for us.
He's played for you. Yeah, he's played for me too. And in fact, I played for him because he was, I think, and Richard has
I've
too.
I've played for him quite a lot. Yep.
Yeah, captain of the Lords and Commons cricket team. And I think he's come on tour with us fairly recently in Pakistan. Crispin did. I mean, because he had a very long experience, you know. Playing cricket before he came out about, 10 or 15 years ago? I can't remember.
Yeah, both of you were cricket lovers, found it so difficult to join a cricket club before the Graces came along and gave you an opportunity. And has that problem been encountered by other members? Have you had do other members of the Graces, you know, come to you with the same experience? Say they would have loved to have played, when they're at school and afterwards, and there was just nowhere that allowed them to express themselves freely.
Yeah, I think so. It's our experiences are certainly not uncommon. To put a slightly positive spin on it, because it's not all doom and gloom, we do have a number of players who play for other clubs on Saturdays, and they are out and proud, as it were, and don't have any problems. So things are changing and things are improving, and people's awareness of the issues is improving. And irrespective of what people's private views may be, there's now a much greater understanding that it's not acceptable to express those views publicly. One interesting anecdote I had is that I was invited to play for Shepherd's Bush Cricket Club in a friendly game. And
nice team, a very good team. Norman yeah. Cowans used to play for them.
Yeah,
the bowling for Shepherd's Bush. So I always steered clear of them for that reason.
it's a great club. And I, you know, only knew one player on the team, the guy who'd got me in. And of course, he knew about my sexuality, but none of the other players did. And of course, I don't turn up and say, "Hi, guys, I'm gay." You just play and get on with it and go through your normal discourse. It was only in the bar afterwards that I was presented with an awkward situation. And it was the barman at the club we were playing. This was not someone from Shepherd's Bush Cricket Club, I should add. And I ordered a round of half pints because we'd already had one drink and people were driving. And the barman said to me, "Oh, we don't do half pints, mate." I was like, "Oh, well, ha, ha, ha. We're all driving, so we kind of have to have half pints." He's like, "All right, then, all right. I'm going to have to take your picture and put it on the gay wall then." So, you know, I'm then presented with a very tricky situation because all these players that I don't know are surrounding me. And I sort of turn and look at them and look at my friend who does know. And he just kind of lifted his shoulders as if to say, "Oh, I don't know." And nobody laughed. Nobody joined in. It was awkward for everybody, actually, but nobody said anything. And then I was confronted with that moment of, "Oh, do I now come out to everybody and say, oh, well, actually, I am gay. So if you've got a gay wall, please take my photo." Actually, I wish I had said that, but I didn't have the courage. And I just remained silent and, you know, the moment passed awkwardly and on it went. And I, you know, those guys still don't know that I'm gay. And this is the kind of thing that happens in clubs when people don't know that there is a gay person there. And this is what makes it difficult for people.
It's very interesting that the some of the Graces players can't reveal their faces or names on scorecards and match reports, still afraid in 2021 to talk about these things or acknowledge their sexuality.
Some of the players that we have other lives as well, so they will be very, very afraid of other people being aware of exactly who they are. They enjoy their cricket, they want to partake in something, but there is a great fear that other people might find out who they are, whether it's through work or extended families. Typically, this would be from cultures, perhaps in Southeast Asia, where they're just afraid that anybody is, well, back home, India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, would know more about their life in the UK than they really want to let out, to let on, in that sense. And it does make it very difficult, and it means it's wonderful that a place like Grace's and our regular playing other teams that we play regularly, and sometimes we even play for them if they're short. There's a nice sense of a community with other clubs, that at least these people can come and they can play and they can be open in this environment, albeit that come Sunday night, Monday morning after the game's over, they perhaps have to revert back to an alternative lifestyle or an alternative being, which is a shame.
Yeah, it's a reminder that Grace is plays a role on the international stage, because a lot of people escape their home countries where they're not allowed to be themselves to come to London, and then they find Grace's and find a sanctuary. So it really is, we have a great international presence. And when you look at the top 10 cricketing nations, 50% of them are legally homophobic. Homosexuality is illegal in 5 of the top 10 cricketing nations. You can only get married in 4 of those top 10 cricketing nations. It's against that backdrop that Graces exists and provides a safe place for these people from those countries.
Indeed, and the ICC headquarters itself in Dubai, where homosexuality is criminal. Do you think that's disgraceful? I certainly do. And has the ICC done anything for the rights of gay cricketers in any country, and should it be doing more?
Yeah, this is something I feel quite strongly about, and something that came up in my mind in light of the Shannon Gabriel versus Joe Root incident, because it drew my attention to the issue and how sexual discrimination is treated and dealt with in a slightly different way to the way racism is dealt with. So the ICC take a very strong stand against racism and indeed legislate very specifically against it. They had a whole code of conduct relating to racism, an anti-racism code. They don't have an anti-homophobic code. And if you read their code of conduct about offensive language, it says, using language or gestures that is seriously obscene, seriously offensive, or a seriously insulting nature to another player, player support personnel, umpire, match referee, or any other third person during an international match. This offence is not intended to penalise trivial behaviour. When assessing the seriousness of the breach, the umpire shall be required to take into account the context of the particular situation and whether the words or gesture are likely to be regarded as seriously obscene, give serious offence, seriously insult another person. This offence is not intended to cover any use of language or gestures that are likely to offend another person on the basis of their race, religion, gender, colour, descent, national or ethnic origin. Such conduct is prohibited under the ICC's anti-racism code and must be dealt with according to the procedures set out therein. So, whilst clearly the offensive language code deals with sexuality, as demonstrated by the way Shannon Gabriel was disciplined by the ICC for his comments, clearly they don't view it as being as serious because they don't deal with it specifically in the way that they do anti-racism. And the fact that there are no sanctions against these countries that are inherently homophobic demonstrates that they just don't take it as seriously. Now, I remember doing a radio interview in light of that, and I was asked, yeah, but come on, where do we draw the line? You know, isn't it just banter? And this is part of cricket and part of sledging. My point was that we take racism very seriously because people are being killed around the world and discriminated against around the world and have done throughout history on the basis of their skin colour. It's a very serious issue. Exactly the same can be said for homosexuality. Indeed, Afghanistan is now in a difficult situation with the Taliban taking over, and there are reports of homosexual people being hunted down with a view to being killed. Afghanistan is one of the top 10 one-day international cricketing nations. This is a grave problem and is why it should be taken seriously in the same way that racism should absolutely be taken seriously. And, you know, yes, there's a role for banter, but people aren't being killed because their mum's fat. People aren't being killed because they have ginger hair. You know, the usual kinds of things that you hear on sports fields, in sledging terms. So it's sad to me that the ICC aren't doing more against discrimination on the grounds of sex and sexuality.
On Afghanistan, which I've been to quite a lot and reported on, and we were talking on the women's cricket front in Afghan, you know, with Tanya Aldred about this, that you should sort of cancel, you shouldn't allow the Afghan inter-test cricket because of its attitude to women. You seem to be saying that should they be excluded from world cricket? Were you saying that because of the attitude of the Taliban to gay rights?
I suppose the way I think about it at the moment, and I'm not the man with the answers to the problems, but I'd like to raise the questions with the ICC. We have these countries playing cricket that have state-sanctioned homophobia. How would the ICC react to state-sanctioned racism? If
you know, you made that point, but let's look at this, and it's playing just as much to women's cricket as to gay. It was... The Taliban would love nothing more than for cricket to be banned and Afghanistan to be banned from that. It isn't, Taliban doesn't care about cricket. On the other hand, I think it's very important. It's a very difficult subject. I don't think there's any right answer. I think it's very important that Afghanistan is kept as much as possible as part of the world community, rather than driven back into a sort of isolationist place. And one of the things which has kept really been wonderful about Afghanistan in the last 30 years has been the rise of that Afghan cricket team. And what you would do, by excluding them, would be to exclude one of the wonderful ways in which Afghan has become part of the rest of the world. And there are pluses and minuses, and maybe even, you know, by doing that, you would educate Afghanistan more about, you know, wider social issues too. I exactly the same applies to the women's issue, and it just worries me that you apply an ideology or a way of seeing the world which has only appeared in the West, thank goodness, since 1960, and to a country which we've bombed and threatened and made living hell for the inhabitants for the last 40 years, us and Russia, we suddenly start to say, you know, apply our own standards, you know, rather than allow them to do it in their own way. I'm not saying that's the right thing to say. I just think that's a point of view which it just increasingly worries me, that's all.
Yeah, and it's the rule of unintended consequences, isn't it? And one never quite knows whether in trying to do a good thing, the impact may be more negative than not doing anything at all.
The other thing is the Northern Alliance, which basically ran Afghanistan before the Taliban came back, all these various collections of warlords, they were no more, I believe. I mean, they weren't very enlightened, I can assure you, either about women or about any other issue you can think of. They were murderous, drug smuggling gangsters in many cases who, you know, were just as, well, in some cases more bigoted and violent than the Taliban.
Yeah, I think the other point is that it does make me uncomfortable, this idea of well, that's the way they see the world, and we should let them get on with it, because, you know, people are being killed on the grounds of their sexuality, which to me is something that I don't understand how that can be in any way defensible.
Isn't the fault of the Afghan cricketers aren't doing that?
No.
Punish the Afghan cricketers. The Taliban couldn't give a damn.
People said the South African cricketers weren't responsible for apartheid.
Yes, but the point is that, yes, Richard, but Tanya Aldred made this point, and it's a very strong one, that from the point of view of the apartheid regime, the national sports like rugby and cricket were absolutely vital parts of that ideological racist structure. The Taliban is now running Afghanistan. It couldn't it couldn't care less about cricket, and probably many elements within the Taliban would prefer to get rid of it altogether. So it's not the same thing there.
No, but it is the same thing in certain ways, because you have to start, you know, some societies don't improve with engagement at all. South Africa didn't improve with decades of engagement with trade and sporting links. Nazi Germany didn't improve with sporting links and with trade and with constant engagement, constant people going up to the Nazis and saying, let's do a deal about this and that. China's not improving with engagement, with the golden age of engagement. Sometimes sport has a very poor, I'm going to put the opposite point of view, sport in general has an extraordinarily bad record of dealing with wider social issues,
very much
particularly
so.
with human rights issues. Yeah. And the counter view is all international sports really should be making a stand, should be making sport collectively a safe environment for everybody, as participants and spectators. And in countries which don't do this, don't deserve to be in international sport. That's the counter view.
I understand that. I fear that in Afghanistan, you would just simply end up putting an end altogether to Afghanistan cricket. And you certainly would drive it out of the international stage if you punish Afghan national team, which, as far as I understand it, is nothing to do with the Taliban for the new government or new regime, which has taken over since August.
No, we don't quite know what's going on there. And it may, you know, it's... The ICC is supposed to be investigating what's happening to Afghan cricket. We don't know how it's doing that and by what means it's doing it. It's very possible that Afghan cricketers are under some sort of duress, and any cricketers with family in Afghanistan must be living under duress from the Taliban in some way or other. They may well be poster boys for the Taliban.
Well, if that's the case, of course you should come to the aid of cricketers who are under duress, but that's anyway. It's I fully understand there are two ways of thinking about looking at it, and it's not it's very. But I just wanted to put the other point of view.
Yeah, and I try and draw an analogy with the arts, and Afghani filmmakers, for example. I don't think we would dream of banning them from film festivals around the world because of their governmental regimes. But I just think the fact that the ICC don't specifically legislate against homophobia, whereas they do racism, suggests that they're somehow kowtowing to these countries and are not wishing to offend them in some way.
What about the ECB? Are they addressing homophobic behaviour in cricket? Let's bring Stuart in on that one.
At the moment, the ECB have got their hands full with the racist issues that are going on. I think there is a great keenness. In fact, I've been liaising with them on another LGBT sort of cricket supporters group that we're trying to get set up as a Pride England supporting for watching these internationals that are going on, which would be excellent. We feel that there's a demand for supporters to have their own club, and when discussing this with the ECB, they're showing a lot of keenness to be involved and to support it. At the present, their head is turned into Yorkshire and into county cricket at the moment, dealing with other issues. There's a new diversity and inclusion leader who is certainly very, very keen to to get involved in it, which is nice. It's a long time coming. We've been talking with them for a little while, through Graces for a great number of years. And it's taking a while for them to come aboard and say, look, it's more than just a bit of lip service. We actually want to further the awareness at club level, minor counties or major counties, rather than just being at the very small village club or level that currently they don't really have the time, the capacity and the scope for. So it's definitely a work in progress, and they are showing interest. Let's hope that we can progress things in a positive way there.
Are there any specifically LGBT teams in other countries at all? Are there any in test playing countries or in other countries? Is there any scope for having an international league of them?
Not LGBT teams. I think there are many teams who would see themselves as being welcoming and open and would love to have a tournament or some international matches going ahead as a way of sort of supporting the cause. But as far as LGBT teams or teams that identify in an overtly open way of inclusion, we are the only two, which is a shame. Graces came about 25 years ago, and the Unicorns only just last year. So it's a shame that it's taken such a long time just to get the second one going. And we're hoping that in time there will be more, and let's hope for some more international ones as well. There's a rumour that some Australians are keen to formulate some players, like-minded players, and create a team, which would be excellent. It's quite a long way to go, but hopefully it'd be really worthwhile. And then perhaps we can have a matchup that's better than the matchup that's going on in the Test cricket at the moment.
And the first gay Ashes is something that's on our agenda. But it's interesting, I was talking to the chairman of Broxbourne Cricket Club, who's been a tremendous support to us. Broxbourne Cricket Club is now our home ground, a guy called Tim. And I was asking him, you know, why isn't there a gay team in Sydney? Because there's a huge gay scene there, and cricket is obviously a huge part of their culture. And he was kind of explaining that cricket there is slightly different in that there isn't the infrastructure available for less serious cricketing teams, the boozy teams that we have here. So finding a place to play in Australia is a little more tricky. That was an interesting point that I wasn't aware of.
I'm sure he's right. I mean, grade cricket's a very serious, which is the basic structure of Australian cricket. It's a very serious, matter. And when I've played cricket in Australia, there are quite a lot of surprise that people play it just, you know, for fun.
Yeah.
No surprise when they see me play. I mean, there'd be no other sort of team that I could possibly be accepted for.
Underlying this whole conversation is, for me anyway, is the Aziz Rafiq affair. So what we're now, over the last year, we've had more and more evidence, more and more voices about racial discrimination in English cricket. And the question has to be asked, is there an analogous situation regarding gay people? Because how many gay cricketers have played first-class cricket who are openly gay, that is to say, people who have had the courage, one might say, to come out?
Not many, if any. And I think the courage is obviously the key thing here. If people are going to feel that the ability to proceed in a professional way is going to be hampered by coming out, then why would you do it? And if you feel that there's a culture of being discriminated or being picked on or being sort of isolated for your sexual identity when you're trying to focus on your sport and your accomplishments with a bat and a ball and fielding, then you really don't want to be putting yourself at a disadvantage. And that's an awful shame. And statistically, you would have thought there would be tens, if not hundreds of players.
Must have been, exactly so. And they've just decided to keep quiet about it. And is there banter, to coin a phrase, in the dressing rooms of English cricket teams, which would be the kind of thing which equivalent to what Azim Rafiq and his other Asian and black players have had to put up with? I don't know.
Certainly there would be, absolutely, without a doubt. However, if it gets made aware of if some words come out and then there was a banter that was really inappropriate, then I do feel that perhaps clubs might now come out and tackle it head on and say, actually, you know, we can't do that anymore. I think if people don't come out and the banter continues and no one makes a complaint, then it sort of slides along rather blindly and under any sort of particular radar. If no one's going to make a complaint or nobody's going to draw attention to the fact that it's a normalised pattern of behaviour.
Yeah, because it's a very analogous of football, isn't it? I mean, it is a pity, isn't it? Because if you look at it, I think it's true that there isn't never been a Premiership gay player. And if you look at the good or the wonderful things which, say, Mo Salah has done for racial relations and by extension combating Islamophobia too in Britain, and yet that doesn't exist. You know, that it does need somebody to have a lot of courage, doesn't it? To say, look, this isn't good enough. This is who I am. And I guess there's all sorts of considerations, but it's amazing that there's never been a gay footballer. And I think there has been one. Richard, you're so much more learned than I am about everything, actually.
Well, Justin Fashanu, there's no out Premier League footballer or indeed league footballer at the moment that I know of. There've been Justin Fashanu, I think it was, came out in the past. In the cricket world, I think the only one is Stephen Davis of Surrey and Somerset, and he played some one day internationals for England. And he's had no. I think he encountered a lot of support when he did come out in 2011, and since then. But it's really disturbing, isn't it, that he's the only one in a pool of, you know, several hundred full-time county professionals. And one suspects that problem isn't so much at the very top level of the game, but it's in the sort of pipeline to the top level. And you've both described some of this at the, you know, at the club level. And it's, I think, particularly acute for young gay men who don't want to expose themselves to that kind of pressure in a sporting environment, as you said.
It's very much what you were talking about from your personal experience, actually. You were talking about exactly that it put you off the game because you were subject to sort of conversations which you didn't want and which discriminated against you and were unpleasant.
Or which simply tagged you.
I mean, nobody wants to be defined in terms of what terms that turns them on, I suppose. And you know, all this serves to do is to compound the stereotypes of gay people. If there are no gay people playing sport, then this is why people hold the view that, oh, I can't be gay because I do play sport. It's a great shame. And we are aware that there are some high-profile footballers who are gay and are receiving support and help from a charitable organisation who deals specifically with these issues. And there are question marks over whether or not they will come out at some point, but they do exist. They're just not out, and we don't know who they are. So,
Are you aware of any cricketers? Because there's got to be quite a few.
I'm not aware of any cricketers.
Yeah.
But yes, they must be there.
And perhaps on a different note, on a positive note, as I was captaining a game this past summer, it happened to be Pride Month, I think it was, and we were playing a league game against a club that we'd never played before, and I went out and I was going to do the toss with the other captain, and he said, just before we do the toss, I just want to say it's really great what you guys represent. And I'm thinking about the game, the weather, beautiful. We're trying to work out whether it's a green strip or what we're going to do, depending on who won. And it just really floored me. It took me by complete surprise that this comment that came out, and it was so genuine. I was overawed and just said, look, thank you ever so much. Really appreciate it. And we did the toss. We had a chat about how we, you know, the spirit of the game that we're going to play it in, as we usually do. And it was really, really pleasant. And as we walked off going to our separate teams, he just said, and that comment, I said, I really meant it, you know, I think it's fantastic. And it could not have been said in a nicer way. There was no tokenism. There was no need for it to be brought up at all. We just happened. I didn't realise it was Pride Month as such. It was just we're going out for a game of cricket on a Sunday afternoon, and it really touched me that they were. And it wasn't just this one player was the one who was saying it, their captain, but their whole team were clearly happy to be playing against Graces, and to be a part of the moment of the day. It was marvellous. Many of them stayed around for a drink afterwards and joined us in the bar. We were playing up at Broxbourne, where the facilities are incredible, and you could feel that there was this sense of, you know, we don't normally come across this, but we're really, really pleased to be playing with you guys and have a proper game. I mean, Graces won, which was always quite a nice thing as well. But it was really left an impression with me. It marked me how kind and open spirited it was. Just those few words of acknowledgement that were completely unasked for.
Stuart, that's a wonderful story. Makes a very, very positive note to end what's been a really enthralling conversation. Stuart and Chris, thank you very, very much for joining us. Best of luck for season 2022.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having us.
Thank you indeed.
I learned so much from that conversation. Best of luck next year. And we also arrange a game sometime.
That'd be too good
Absolutely.
For us.
That would be much too good for us, Richard.
That'd be too good for us. We'll have the same experience as we have in Pakistan. Yeah.
Anyway, it's goodbye from me, Peter Oborne, in a rather less frozen Wiltshire.
Goodbye from me, Richard Heller, in a still grey and drizzly South East London.